This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Kunta Vandenberg. What is going on, brother?
What's up, Toby?
We are definitely going to get into part two of our expose on the secret origins of Marcus Vandenberg. But before we get into that, real quick, Marcus, I hear you had a very interesting interview this week with someone who wrestling fans are very familiar with.
Yeah, so last Thursday, I chatted with Stephanie McMahon for about 20 minutes or so. And the interview is up on Yahoo Sports. I guess the two biggest takeaways from the interview was, one, her addressing the domestic violence policy for the company now, where upon arrest, a WWE superstar will be suspended. And if they are convicted of the crime, they'll be terminated immediately. So that is a bit of a change from the past, and in part probably because of the Ray Rice situation with the professional leagues. But their stance now is more strict than most professional leagues in terms of you got one shot. I mean, NFL, I believe currently, it's not you're not banned from the league if you're convicted. So they're really not playing around in WWE. And the other takeaway was the whole rumor regarding Total Divas, and it started, I believe, with one of the Bella twins on Rosenberg addressing the situation where I guess Rosenberg asked, I forget if it was Nikki or Brie, but basically that, can you be on Total Divas and still be the Divas Championship? And the response was no, because the continuity of the reality show and having the title. But Stephanie denies this rumor. She says she doesn't know where it started. I told her where it started, and she answered and said, absolutely not true. She would love to have someone on Total Divas win the championship. Yeah, she was nice. You gotta remember, she's the chief brand officer, so sometimes a lot of her answers were a bit corporate in nature, but that's her job. But yeah, she was nice.
Okay, and she wasn't obviously she hadn't heard about your show, because you haven't always been the kindest to her place of business.
No, I got worried though. So I had jury duty last week as well, and I was worried about having jury duty land on the day I was doing the interview. So I told the WWE rep this. So at the very end of the interview, I'm talking about how I'm going to Hell in a Cell this weekend in Dallas, taking my cousin, blah, 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 blah. And at the very end, she goes, well, I got some bad news. You're actually banned by the courts. You can't go to Hell in a Cell. And she was making a jury duty crack. And I was like, how the hell did she know about that? And I was like, she must have found out. But I'm guessing she didn't hear that conversation we had with Court Bauer, which is good.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, like I think that the conversation with Court, even if she did hear it was probably balanced out by the fact that one member of the team is no longer with us that had some heat with that organization.
Yeah, that's true. I forget, he was the troublemaker, not me.
Yeah, he was the heat magnet.
Yeah,
He was the one that wasn't on the list at the SummerSlam party.
That was my Thursday. And then Friday, I went to my first Pro Wrestling Guerrilla show out here in Reseda, California.
How was that?
Pretty great. It's going to ruin WWE for me, I think, because it's such a contrast to, especially watching that PWG in person where the venue is so small and you're, you know, literally feet away from the competition and the action compared to WWE where it's so just not only slower in the ring, but just so stale and so predictable. It was a bit of a spot for us at PWG. That's what they're known for. But Ronda Rousey was in the audience, which is interesting. She was sitting front row with the rest of the Four Horsewomen. And Brad Maddox was there as well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. A lot of people last week were a little bit underwhelmed, Marcus, by part one of The Secret Origins of Marcus Vandenberg, where we learned, surprise, surprise, Marcus has roots in Africa.
Hey, you never know. I could have been some, like, where else are black people found? All right, never mind.
So we're going to give you a chance, Marcus, because a lot of people want to know about the more of the history of the Vandenberg lineage. And I think you found some more information. And so we're gonna give you the floor right now in part two of Marcus Vandenberg.
By the way, Secret Origins. I heard you, John Pollock, mocking part two. Yes, it's part two, John Pollock. We have two parts here.
Yeah, that was for you. He needs two parts?
Yes, I need two parts. So I got the goods from my dad and the results from his DNA test. And we already went over the African origins with Ivory Coast and Nigeria and Cameroon. But the European side, so 44% of the, I guess the breakdown came back, was from Europe. Of the 44%, 25% Great Britain.
Huh.
Yeah. 7% Europe West. And Europe West is classified as France, Germany, looks like part of Italy. It's a bit hodgepodge of European countries. And then there's a whole 12% of sort of trace regions that include Ireland, Scandinavia, Finland, and Northwest Russia. My favorite part of this, 2% West Asia.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't say where West Asia, what exactly it means, but 2% of me, or maybe 1% once he gets down to me and not my dad, West Asia. So me and Wei Ting.
Let's say maybe you and Dennis Black and Asian have some things in common. So, but the majority of your European ancestry is British.
Yeah, I'm a hooligan.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, what was the biggest part of the African? Was it Nigerian or Liberian?
Ivory Coast and Ghana.
Okay, and so you got the Ivory Coast and Ghana, and you've got Great Britain, so essentially you're like the slave trade special.
I'm like Thierry Henry, basically.
Yeah.
No, wait, no, Thierry's French, right? He's not British.
Yeah, he's French. He's French.
Who's another British black soccer player? I should know these things. But I was definitely, you know, definitely in the house, right? I wasn't in the field. The ancestors were in the field.
Yeah. Interesting. So you're British, and what was it? The trace elements of West Asian,
a whole 2%.
So who gets credit for the hair?
I haven't told the hair story. The hair story is pretty funny. So I don't think I've discussed this on the show, but I have Crohn's disease and. It's actually been 10 years to the month, or it might almost be 10 years to the day we're doing this podcast, when I was diagnosed initially. So if you don't know about Crohn's disease, look it up. I'm not going to get into it now. But as a result, I was taking the medication for my Crohn's disease, and it ended up changing my hair texture, believe it or not.
Hold up. So the medicine that they prescribed you for Crohn's disease gave you good hair?
Yeah. I had,
So pre-Crohn's, your hair was nappy?
Yeah, I had an afro. I used to have an afro when Kobe had his afro. I had the afro going on. Yeah, definitely. And then one day, I remember getting out of the shower, and my hair was wet, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, that's not natural. And my hair texture had changed. So, yeah, that's...
How gradual or how fast was the change? Like, was it overnight, a couple weeks?
It was overnight for me. It was literally one day I noticed getting out of the shower, and I was like, oh, that's weird. I'm not sure how long it actually took, but...
So you took the pill, and then in the morning, oh, that's crazy. So is this a studied side effect of the medication?
I have not seen anything, but I'm sure when you're, you know, doing side effects, the odds of a black person having Crohn's disease, and then B, a combination of knowing enough about black hair and all that stuff, it's probably not even on their radar.
What's the name of the medication?
The one I believe I was taking that caused it was called Remicade, and it was a medication that I took through an IV at a hospital. So I'd have to go every 4 weeks or so for a few hours at a time, sit there with an IV in my arm, and it was pumped in. So I believe that was the one that caused it.
I can hear like the side effect guy at the end of the commercial. Remicade may cause anxiety, depression, heart rate increase, and good hair.
Good hair.
Like that good Indian hair.
Yeah.
Like nice and curly. Like the hair. You can run your hands through it. Run your fingers through it.
Yeah, but my hair was quote-unquote nappy at one point.
And I know somebody out there is listening like, damn, I need to get some of that Remicade, baby. Yeah. I need to... Can you buy this Remicade on the black market? That is crazy.
Because my brother doesn't have my hair toucher, so it's just me.
Yeah, all this time I thought the hair was from the European side, but no, it's chemically made. It's man-made hair.
Man-made hair that hasn't gone away yet.
I was like, you got a blood transfusion from Elder Barge?
Nah, my hair's been this way for probably 9 years now, at least. Been a long time.
That's crazy. Like, yeah, maybe this is a superhero story.
I'll find a picture of me with an afro.
Oh. One day, mild-mannered reporter Marcus Vandenberg took the secret solution, and when he woke up, he had manageable hair. Oh, this is crazy. Like, yeah. I think, like, we should do a biography on Marcus Vandenberg.
Nah, I'm not that interesting.
It's like the African roots, the European roots, your hair roots.
European roots is the reason why I think I have Crohn's disease, because Crohn's disease is not a disease that is...
In the black community?
A black community disease, no. It's not like diabetes or anything like that. It's more of our European... brothers and sisters who have this ailment. So,
now, why can't I get sickle cell like everybody else in the hood?
Yeah.
Which I learned that I don't know if it's a cure. It probably isn't, but something that helps prevent sickle cell is yams.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe that's what Cunningham was up to all these years,
trying to prevent himself.
Yeah, it's like there's something in potatoes, but particularly in yams that counteracts the sickle cell anemia.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. So if anybody out there is a doctor, you know, write in and let us know, is this an old wives' tale, or is it true? Does eating yams help prevent sickle cell disease? That's going to do it for a very interesting, very left of center edition of the A-Block.
You didn't see that one coming, huh?
No, we didn't see that coming at all. So, from Marcus's European and Asian roots, and his good hair, the true secrets of his hair, which we learned are chemically enhanced. Using performance enhancing drugs on your hair.
Yeah.
Got them PEDs
for the hair.
Oh, so yeah. The only way I think we can top this is by talking about Percy Harvin in second down. You down for that, Marcus?
I'm down.
All right, stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gab fest, and your weekly football focus. It's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate holding things down. And if you're hearing that music, then it must mean one thing and one thing only. It is time for Second Down, our weekly football focus. And this week, we're going to take a look at a couple of interesting NFL stories. And of course, we're going to get into our Kings of Sport NFL picks contest, challenge, if you will, between Marcus and myself. But before we get into that, there were some moves this past week since the last time we talked, I guess, in the NFL. And maybe no move was more surprising than a transaction that involved the defending world champions and Marcus's beloved New York Jets.
Poor Percy Harvin. from the Super Bowl to the New York Jets. I do wonder, soon after the trade was made and people realized what the Jets gave up to Percy Harvin, you knew something had to come out about why Seattle was making this deal, and it did. And the information was that Percy Harvin had gotten into multiple fights with teammates, including Golden Tate, who he punched out during the Super Bowl week and gave him a shiner. And he had an incident with Russell Wilson as well at some point. So the Jets gave up pretty much nothing, a conditional draft pick to acquire Percy Harvin and give him his now third shot in the NFL in terms of sticking with the team longer than a year or two. So I'm not sure if he's going to make a difference this year, but the baggage that he brings, I'm not sure if this is going to end well for Percy in New York. To be only 26 and have all this history about being just a hothead and not controlling his anger and fighting with teammates and being a cancer, that's not a good look.
Yeah, on his third team in six seasons. And it's funny, if you look at what teams have given up to acquire him, the value for his services has just gone down over the years. And you talk about the run in the air with Golden Tate. You talk about, the incidents with Russell Wilson, which it's never a good sign if your receiver, no matter how talented he is, if he is seen by some in the locker room as punking out your quarterback. Because, that didn't work in Philly with T.O. and Donovan McNabb. It didn't work in San Francisco with T.O. and Jeff Garcia.
Yeah.
If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it's a duck. So I don't think this was going to be a situation that could last in Seattle. And now we're hearing reports of divisions within the locker room. And obviously, one player that was not happy about the move was Marshawn Lynch, who went to Twitter and tweeted out after the trade was made, "Damn, they got my nigga." Which is Just a perfect encapsulation. I think that Percy Harvin is a guy that obviously has a lot of talent. We saw that in the Super Bowl, and we've seen it at times during this season. You know, he's a guy that can change the game on one or two plays. But you get to a point where when does the talent, you know, get eclipsed by the trouble? And you know, is it worth it in the end? I think for New York, it fits because this season's pretty much a lost season for the Jets anyway. And you know, just kind of working him in there, I think if he can get his head on straight, which might be a difficult task in that locker room, he can be a useful weapon. And Lord knows Eric Decker is not a number one receiver. So, you know, anybody that can take some of the pressure off of Decker, I think is good for that passing attack. But, you know, as a Jets fan, were you pleased with this move, Marcus?
I mean, in terms of what they gave up, it's worth the risk. If he, you know, comes in, gets in trouble, they can always cut him. It's not going to be the end of the world. But if he performs well, then it's you know, a win for the Jets. You mentioned Decker, yeah.
I mean, essentially, it's like it's kind of like the Deshaun Jackson deal for the Redskins. Like, they didn't have to give up a whole lot. And the upside, if this guy can actually get his stuff together, you know, it's a great player on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been great this year by any means. He had that weird game against Washington where he had 3 touchdowns called back due to penalty. But besides that, he's been pretty mediocre in Seattle. And I'm not sure if that's in part because of the issues going on in the locker room that he just wasn't getting the proper looks or what, but he's been pretty underwhelming this season. So, but yes, he's very talented, very explosive. He's still only 26, as you mentioned. And the Jets do need help. They need a lot of help at a receiver. And, you know, having Harvin and Decker and the Jets this week also signed Jeremy Curley to a long-term deal, who is a good little slot receiver. So, they got three decent wide receivers now. The problem will always be, for the time being, the quarterback situation. Who can get the ball to the receivers? And Geno Smith has not proved to be efficient at that role. And Michael Vick hasn't looked much better. But I think Michael Vick will be a guy, hopefully, who can sort of mentor Percy Harvin and sort of keep him in line.
Yeah, I would say if the value of Vick to me is more in the locker room these days than on the field. And especially with somebody like Percy Harvin, who you know, comes from this area, comes from the 757, who is obviously influenced by Michael Vick to some extent, watching him as a kid. I think that even if Vick isn't the player that once was on the field, you know, having a guy like him to sort of mentor Percy Harvin, that could be valuable for the Jets.
Yeah, and Harvin has a long-term deal that the Jets can get out of, I believe, after the season without taking a big cap hit. So he's really playing to keep his contract going for next season. So hopefully the Jets will see the best of Percy Harvin and not the worst, because, you know, if he does get cut, I don't think there's an NFL team out there who's going to toss him big bucks next season. So he needs to really, you know, keep his head on straight.
No, I don't see anybody opening up the checkbooks for him, but there will always be a place for talent, regardless of the behavior. So if Percy can get his head on straight, though, I think he can be a factor in this league. But speaking of guys that have a place in this league, Marcus, damn, they got my nigga. Michael Sam, as of right now, you know, things could change, but as of right now, no longer employed by the National Football League.
I haven't heard his name mentioned in weeks. Until this week.
Yeah, I was gonna say, since last time we talked about him was when the Cowboys signed to the practice squad.
Yeah, and actually, I haven't heard Johnny Manziel's name mentioned outside of this week, when there was a story about the Cleveland coach who thought briefly about benching Hoyer for Manziel. But two rookies who, prior to the season, were supposed to be distractions on their teams. And both rookies who have been quiet and really haven't been in the headlines since the season started.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, Percy Harvin was a bigger distraction than Michael Sam.
Oh, yeah.
And he still got a job. And that's because, you know, with all due respect to Michael Sam, you know, Percy Harvin has NFL-level talent, where Michael Sam, even though he was a great player in college, I just don't think he has the skills to be an effective player on that next level.
Yeah, I don't know where he goes now. I mean, I guess another practice squad maybe, but it's not looking good so far for his NFL.
Well, it's too late to go to Canada.
Yeah, at least this season, you know. It's season, and plus, NFL season's almost halfway done. I'm not sure. I mean, unless outside of injury or something along those lines, I'm not sure if he's going to get a sniff this season.
Yeah, so I think the best thing for him would just be, you know, to keep focused and keep working, but and maybe there'll be an opportunity, like you said, either due to injury or, you know, worst-case scenario next year, you know, whether that is in the NFL or in Canada, which, you know, isn't the worst thing for a guy like Michael Sam, you know, especially when you talk about, you know, somebody that's a homosexual. It's, in a lot of ways, being a homosexual athlete, openly gay athlete in Canada would be easier culturally than, you know, doing so down here in the States.
I think so, definitely.
So, you know, good luck to you, Michael Sam. But now, Marcus, is the segment that I get excited for in Second Down each and every week. And it is the picks challenge between you and myself. And why don't you update the people? Each week we pick five games, four on Sunday and the Monday night game. Update what happened last week and then the season-long results, Marcus.
Week seven last week, we both went 2-3. So now we're still tied at 19-16 on the season.
Interesting. So, yeah, let's pick some games here, and let's see. Let's start with this game, because I know you're going to be conflicted. Your new favorite quarterback in the world, Kyle Orton, and the Bills.
What a comeback. Travel
to take on the New York Jets and Percy Harvin. What's the line on that?
You'll get a kick out of this. Jets -3.
Oh boy, yeah, this game could be ugly, or it could be. I don't know, because Geno looked decent last week. Didn't look great, but he looked decent. I'll let you go first because I want to hear where you go. Or do you go with your heart, or do you go with your head?
Buffalo.
Not even a hesitation. Nope. All right.
They have one running back at the moment, Anthony Dixon. Give me Buffalo.
You know what? I'll go with Percy Harvin.
Going the Jets.
Give me the Jets on that one. All right. Next game on the schedule that we're going to choose. Let's go with Percy Harvin's former team. And like I said, the reigning and defending world champion Seattle Seahawks, as they head to Carolina to take on Ace Boogie and the Panthers.
Seahawks -5.5 on the road. Back on the road after losing last week.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah. At 5.5. give me Carolina.
I'll take the Panthers.
All right. Next game. Oh, let's go with, what does this say? Rematch of the 1985 Super Bowl. The Bears and the Patriots. That was 85, right?
85 was... Was that the Super Bowl Shuffle team?
I think that was the Super Bowl Shuffle team.
Did they beat the Pats?
That's 85 Super Bowl. I should know these things off the top of my head. 85 Super Bowl was the Bears. Yeah, the Bears beat the Pats
46-10. Okay.
Yeah, that was the Super Bowl Shuffle team. So yeah, let's go with that game. The Bears heading to New England to take on the Patriots. What's the line on that?
New England -6.
Ooh. And we had, what was that today? The Bears general manager came out and said that Jay Cutler was was Elite, which was a load of garbage. I'd go with Chicago.
I'd go with the Pats. The Bears are a mess.
Speaking of a mess, Raiders-Browns. What's the line on that?
Fucking flaming piece of dog shit mess. Raiders-Browns. Browns minus -7. After losing to the second worst team in football last week.
Who you got on this?
West Coast team traveling east. It's not a 1 o'clock game, it's an afternoon game. I'll go Raiders.
Okay, I like how you tried to break that down. Analyze it. Give me the Browns. Give me the Browns on this one.
All right.
And finally, the Monday night game. Cowboys and Indians. The Redskins head to Dallas to take on the Cowboys, led by their new starting quarterback, which was, I don't know if I'll go as far as to say I predicted it last week, but we did kind of foreshadow it. Colt McCoy.
Cowboys minus -10.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was going to be a big number. I like the Cowboys. I think that, you know, you could make the argument they're the best team in the NFL right now, but that's a big number. So I'm gonna go with Colt and the Redskins.
Redskins as well.
All right. So those are our picks. Marcus and I both went 2-3 last week. We'll see if we can rebound. And as always, you can leave your feedback on our picks either on Twitter, KOS_POD on Twitter, or Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. So that's it for Second Down. But coming up next, Marcus, we have a return to the show. Last week, Cam Powell made his triumphant return to the show. This week, the embargo was lifted. And we welcome back to the show, TJ McClune. It's about to get mad real up in here. More Kings of Sport right after the break. When I was still in the jungle slinging that D. Get out my face. Don't need no you got no more. Don't need no heads. Been messing up my corner. And then back in that bad look on the face. Hard knock it off. Hey, fool. You ready for another beat? You should have never came back. Look at me. I'm not losing my head. Do this. And you better have a good doctor to rearrange your face. I'm a champ.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Looking for a few good men?
You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Well, your search is finally over. Let's get back to Marcus, Nate, and the show that always gives you the truth, The Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
We are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest in sports and pop culture. And Marcus, last week we had a returning guest to the show, and I think it's time to continue the homecoming theme as we head out to Texas and bring back a man that was on, would you say he was on the bad list? He was on the no-fly list?
I wouldn't say the bad list. He was on the we have too many male guests list. So it wasn't his fault.
Let's just say he's a victim of circumstance because he was on the too many males list, and then
Liked the Nasty, so he was on that list too.
After NWO Black and White split from the Wolfpack, you know, we had to figure out what shirt he was wearing, and he showed up today with the LWO shirt, so I don't know what that means. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program, making his third appearance on the Kings of Sport, friend of the show, and a podcaster in his own right, the one and only TJ McClune. What's going on, my brother?
Thank you, guys. Yes, I am, wearing the LWO with the Ride-On Lawnmower and also the Eddie Guerrero 2000 handheld camera that probably would weigh as much as Paul Heyman's cell phone from back during Dangerous Alliance. But as I started out my previous two appearances with a song lyric, as I'll do with this one, I'll dedicate to the real world because, you know, being here in real world Austin is one of the reasons why I moved to the great city of Texas. With David from New Orleans by saying, "Come on, be my baby tonight," which it's own classic in its own self right there.
If you haven't seen that story on the update on David from the real world, Google that. It's phenomenal. Nate, do you watch the real world? Or did you watch the real world?
I used to watch the real world. The last season I was really invested in was probably, I think it was Seattle.
Oh, wow. They had
the crazy chick and then the black guy.
Irene?
Irene. And then you had the big, tall black dude that said he wasn't gay, but he was real suspicious.
How you doing?
And he slapped her on the last show.
Could you imagine if that happened now? This big black dude slapping this little white girl on TV? Oh, my God.
So that was, because I'm trying to
think. Steven, that was his name.
Steven, yes. Because I watched New York. I watched was it San Francisco. I watched Seattle. And I watched Hawaii.
You didn't watch Boston?
Was Boston must have been the fifth one. Because I remember watching the first four pretty religiously. And then I kind of fell off after that.
By the way, just to touch on Steven, according to the wiki, oldest of five children, black Muslim household. This would have been all bad in 2014. But he converted to Judaism, so I don't know if that balances out like the hate to go from Muslim to Judaism.
That's right.
So he's a black, possibly gay, former Muslim, now currently a Jew.
Oh, and here's the update, Nate. Years after the show finished, Steven came out as gay.
There we go. Circle gets the square.
Yep.
I just remember because the whole thing. If you haven't seen The Real World Seattle in a while, it's brilliant. Just these idiots they put in this house. He stole her doll or teddy bear or something, and he's like chasing her down the pier. He's like, Yoo-hoo, you forgot your teddy bear. And she opens the door and she's like, "Thank you, Steven, for giving me this teddy bear." And he reaches in and cold cocks this crazy chick who had Lyme disease.
Yeah. Irene.
Well, what about back in real world San Francisco where David and Tammy had their little split, had their thing where he's pulling the covers off of her? How big that would play on today's stage if, you know, someone from real world, you know, Sioux City, Iowa, where they're doing the latest casting at, would have a situation like that.
Yeah, that would not be good. By the way, they're going back to Chicago. It's the 30th season.
Huh.
Did you watch last year with the Etzes?
I have not. The last one I can remember was, there's Real World Vegas that's coming in my head. You said, Nate, you said Real World Hawaii and Amaya.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't everybody's girl, but yeah, that's who's speaking of that one. And also Tech. Whatever happened to Tech?
Tech Money. He was in Van Wilder.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I'm looking at the Real World Wikipedia page. So yeah, I watched New York, L.A., San Francisco. I skipped London. I watched Miami. I skipped Boston. I watched Seattle, and then I tapped out at Hawaii.
San Diego? That was the last one I can remember.
Oh wow, San Diego was
2004.
Okay.
Well, there was two San Diegos. There was 2004, and then one. They went back in 2011.
It probably was 2004 because that's when they were making the documentary for some band, and it was for South by Southwest.
Yeah, that was 2004.
Yeah, and they're also like working on like a boat crew. That was weird. Yeah. But there's no better combination than CT and Cyrus. Those two are the 1-2 punch right there.
CT is
the Kevin Nash of the real world road rules challenges.
I have watched some of the challenges.
He comes back every year and he somehow books himself into the main event of every single season. He is the Kevin Nash of those challenges.
So who's Johnny Bananas in?
Ooh, that's Stat a Hall? Good one. I guess because there are 1 and 2, but yet he isn't the drunkard that Hall is. So
yeah.
Former drunkard. So I guess we can go from that. Maybe he's a Diamond Dallas Page.
Okay.
He seems like he'd be real big into yoga.
Yeah. The real world.
Yes.
My favorite incident though, like you just mentioned, shout out to David and Tammy, who that was all instigated by Beth. And once again, the white woman.
Oh, go ahead. I know what it should be, but go ahead.
The white woman escapes repercussion free. But my favorite incident was probably on San Francisco with Puck and Pedro.
Yes.
You stuck your finger in my peanut butter.
That's right.
I thought you were gonna say Real World Miami with Dan.
Oh,
another violent incident.
They wouldn't be able to get away with this today.
Oh, not the male and female violence. No.
No.
I'm trying to think. That wasn't Coral season. That was a Flora season, on Miami, right?
Yeah, Flora, Cynthia, little short ass Joe, who's like 5'2", dating that 6'2" Amazon woman. Melissa. Yeah.
And I was just thinking of, the Austin season, which I remember when I first moved to Austin, I had to go find the Dizzy Rooster, which I then found out that place got very old very quickly once you stopped, realizing, oh my God, this was the real world bar. But Melinda, if you remember her from that season, the 5'11", blonde haired girl that was always linked to Danny, I was always looking for her when I first moved here as well.
That's right. I forgot about Danny.
And Wes, who used to always come back and do the challenges as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which on Wiki, they list them as an obnoxious, super competitive jock.
Sounds right.
Who's been on the real world since 2011.
Johanna, yeah, this was a good season.
Nehemiah, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're going to rank like a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of the angry black males in the real world, Nehemiah was probably closer to the middle. But they've had some angry black males. Cyrus would be like on the far left in terms of like being chill, but
yeah,
they've done some casting where you're just like, oh really? I mean, you couldn't find anyone else.
You can't beat the original though, like Kevin from season one in New York.
Yeah,
when he was out there on the street talking to what's the muscle dude, Eric Knees,
mm-hmm.
He's like, man, you don't know my story, Eric. I didn't get up, and my daddy wasn't an NBA referee. You don't know the pain I've had not getting NBA courtside tickets.
Yeah, Kevin Powell's going on to do some political stuff in New York.
Really?
Yeah, he's had a whole I believe he ran for office in New York, and let's see. Yeah, 2010, it looks like. He lost, by the way.
Well, the Pedro supporter out in San Francisco, I think it was Jeb, was his name.
Yeah.
He also, I thought he ran for office as well in California.
Also, if you want to feel old, Kevin Powell is now 48 years old.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because Heather B was on that season. She had like a couple records out. Eric Knees had the fitness show.
No, a fitness video.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and it was some. Oh, I forget the chick because she was on FX when FX first started. They Patricia Moreno.
Hmm.
And then it was Eric and Patricia, and it was just the worst. I bought it because I was trying to get in shape. I was trying to get them abs, but it didn't work. Yeah,
well,
real world.
You talk about Angry David. He always seemed like he had a temper in the San Fran house, which led to him getting kicked out.
Yeah.
And then was he the first person to get kicked out?
I think so. I remember the days whenever slapping a castmate got you kicked out, whereas now if it doesn't happen in the first two episodes, you're listed as boring.
Yeah, it's encouraged now to be.
Yeah, that whole situation was a little suspect, though, and I love that Chappelle spoofed it so brilliantly on his show because, you know, David got back that night and they were like, we don't feel safe with you in the house. you got to leave your keys. I'm like, hold on, man. All y'all in here, nobody's paying rent. Everybody's in here for free. Like, what gives you the right to tell this guy he can't stay here? And Beth is sitting in the corner knowing that she is the mastermind of this whole debacle.
Of course.
Because Cam was having a good time until Beth started whispering in her ear.
Because, see, Kenny Anderson should have knew what he was getting himself into. He got with Tammy.
It wasn't not funny. I felt violated, and it wasn't not funny. So you saying it was funny?
Good old Kenny Anderson.
All right, let's talk about some sports, because we can talk about the real world for like the next 45 minutes. Like, we haven't even started. Like, I could go on a 20-minute breakdown of road rules and how in the hell Kit Hoover ended up on ESPN2.
Kit Hoover.
That's right.
Wow.
And Pittsburgh guy, Timmy. Tim was the big breakout star of the road rules, who thought he was going to be, you know, he was the wholesome guy who could be funny and yet also talk sports as well.
And road rules, like, I think road rules got the short shift of things. Like, that show, I think they should have had more seasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think there's more opportunity for variety with road rules. Like, you just, like, I'd like to see them take the camper, like, to the middle of the hood. Go to downtown Detroit and just set up, see how they survive.
And their task is having to run like a falafel truck.
Yeah, you can combine food trucks with the road rules.
That's right.
That's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. Something else that's not a bad idea is if you are a gambling man and you're putting money on college football teams from the state of Mississippi, Mississippi State Bulldogs, still number one in the country, undefeated, Florida State right behind them at number two, and Ole Miss, they've got this Mississippi sandwich with Florida State in the middle. A lot of controversy swirling around Florida State. They ended up beating Notre Dame. So my theory still kind of holds place, Marcus. My strategy, because I think Notre Dame's going to run the table. So they might find a way to backdoor into this thing.
You still think but that, huh?
I still believe in Notre Dame. It's 6-1. I still believe in Notre Dame, number 7 in the country. But TJ, we know you're a big college football guy. Anything surprise you last week in the world of college football, or did things kind of play out to the status quo?
I mean, kind of played out to the status quo, to the realm that you expect Notre Dame to go into Tallahassee, where Jameis Winston has yet to lose, you know, a college football game as it is, and lose that game. Whether it be a controversial play at the end, with the pass interference thrown to David Robinson's kid, you know, it was pass interference, first and foremost. You can't have three guys running right at defensive backs and pushing them back into the end zone. So seeing them win Florida State, seeing Alabama just blow the doors off of Texas A&M wasn't that shocking as well. I mean, Texas A&M, as good as they are on offense, they still have a suspect defense, just like they did during the Johnny Manziel years. And Ole Miss just dominating Tennessee, that was expected as well. What I'm not happy about, and I brought this up in a podcast taping I did today for Place to Be Nation with my co-host at T-Todd's Tailgate, is that Florida State is still behind Mississippi State in the rankings when it came out this week. You know, beating a top-5 team in Notre Dame, I believe they should have moved past Mississippi State when the polls came out this week.
I agree, and I blame it all on Jameis. I feel like this is all Jameis's fault. If to the sense that if Jameis wasn't on the team, I think Florida State would definitely be number one. But I think the voters from not only the media but the coaches as well are sort of saying, hey, look, you know, we're tired of this guy, and as a result, we're going to punish Florida State.
And I, to that point, I agree, you know, it's unfair to Jameis. It's a witch hunt going out for him and trying to find autographs that he may or may not have signed and trying to find any photographic or video proof that he did something wrong to go on top of his expletive gate, I guess you could call it, for yelling things out in the student union and also the, you know, having to steal crab legs from Publix. But to that extent, it's going to keep him from winning his second Heisman Trophy, something that he should do as the best player in college football.
And let's be real about it. Like, the whole thing with Jameis comes from a place of people are angry, and even some people in the media are angry because they feel that he got away with rape. Let's be real with it, you know, because sure, the crab leg things is stupid, but that's something that any college kid will do. It's just an idiotic move. What he did at the student union, hopping up on the table, it's in poor taste, but again, stupid kid stuff. The autograph thing, we've seen it time and time again, whether you're talking about Todd Gurley, Johnny Manziel, going back even before that. You know, it's not something that is shocking or new in the world of college football. I think what you're seeing is a backlash to feeling that this guy got away with something, and he may have, he may not have, but the feeling that he you know, got away with a crime without proof. You know, that's the thing. Like, nobody has proof that he did anything to obstruct the investigation or, you know, pay off the sheriff's department or anything of that nature. But this assumption that he got away with a crime is coloring our whole perspective on not only Jameis, but as you alluded to, you know, Florida State season this year.
Well, and let me ask you guys this. Does it feel like, you know, is this going to be completely not off the radar, but with O.J. Simpson? They thought he got away with murder. Then next thing you know, he goes back into that Vegas hotel room. He gets busted for stealing back his own memorabilia. If something does happen with Jameis and there is photographic proof that he, you know, did sign these autographs, is the temperature in the nation going to be, okay, we got our guy, just like it was with OJ, okay, yeah, now he's in jail?
Well, if it comes down to the NCAA, I think they're so gun-shy about, you know, trying to drop the hammer on these guys because they've been wrong in the past, that I think that if they rely on Florida State to make this move, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Florida State is content with trying to get one more national title and parting ways with Jameis at the end of the season. Because, we saw with Todd Gurley what happened with him, and George just said, hey, look, you got to sit down right away. Florida State put out a statement, I believe last Thursday or Friday before the Notre Dame game, and they seem to have no problems playing this guy. And if it means losing wins on the back end, so be it. But for the time being, they're riding with him. So I don't trust the NCAA to really make that move.
Yeah, and in fairness to Florida State, I mean, I'd be doing the exact same thing. I mean, it's the burden of proof is on you to prove that this guy did something wrong. You know, he's told us that he didn't do it. And as the coach and as the administration, you know, we're going to believe him. We're going to continue to win football games. And he's innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around. To TJ's point, though, I do think that, you know, not so much from the NCAA side, but from the media and from some fan bases out there, I think that there is this clamoring for, you know, he hasn't paid his proper penance. He, you know, we need a pound of flesh from Jameis Winston, whether he did or did not do the things that we think that he did or the things that he's accused of doing. And I think they won't be satisfied until there is some action taken against him.
And the question as well is, if you don't, and we'll bring it back to the Heisman, if you don't bring him to New York or put him in as the top player in the country, then who is that top player that will overtake him as a potential back-to-back national champion, back-to-back 30 touchdown passer and also a back-to-back 3,000-yard passer as well?
If I had to guess right now, based on as long as they keep winning, I think it might be Dak Prescott and Mississippi State will be that guy.
That's right.
A lot of it's going to depend on the final record on the season, as most of the Heisman race, unfortunately, depends on. But if the record holds and if they run the table, then I think Prescott is going to be your Heisman.
And it's a bit of a shame, though, because I think you could argue that Jameis has done more for this team this year with less talent than he did last year. I mean, outside of, what, the kicking game and the quarterbacking, this Florida State team is kind of average, if you think about it, for a team that is such high, that is so highly ranked. If you go position by position, they don't match up well with these SEC teams. You know, the only thing that keeps them up there with these guys is their great skill at quarterback and then their special teams.
And, you know, with this Seminole squad, I think the reason why we as a nation were looking at them differently is because they're not beating teams 55-6 like they were last year. If they were running the squad or running the table and Wayne Winston was out for the second half like he was last year, then I think it's different. But at their schedule, they go to Louisville Thursday, the 30th. But after that, they have Miami, Virginia, Boston College, and a terrible Florida team. So there's nothing stopping this team from being the giant elephant in the room of being in a national title or national semifinal like they are this year.
Well, that's what I'm waiting for, because I could see them, the playoff committee, leaving Florida State out of the top four somehow based on the schedule.
Really? Even if they would run the table with at Louis, with the final five games?
Yeah, you got to figure you're not playing a ranked team. You're playing probably Duke or Virginia again in the ACC championship game.
Or Pittsburgh.
Oh,
I forgot
you're a Pitt guy.
Yeah,
but you don't have a ranked team left on your schedule. The way the SEC is going in terms of you got what, four in the top five?
Yep.
And all four in the same side of the SEC conference. So, you know, weirder things have happened. And you mentioned Notre Dame. Notre Dame's the wild card. If Notre Dame does run the table, I think they will somehow get one of those spots, possibly. So I think that would be the ultimate fuck you to Jameis if first it runs the table and they are the only undefeated team that matters outside of Marshall. Marshall doesn't count. But they somehow missed the playoffs. I think that would be redemption. And it would be sad for all the talk about college football needing a playoff system, and for the first year to have an undefeated team not make the top four would be pretty fucked up, to be honest.
Very, very messed up.
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, egregious, because you can't have a team from a major conference go undefeated, defending national champion, and they get shut out. I think the outcry from the fans would just be so loud. You know what I mean?
Well, you got to remember, it's only be Florida State fans. It's not to me. I think Jameis
has
turned off.
I think that you know, Jameis aside, I think that in terms of sports fans wanting the playoff, they want the playoffs to see the best team, to see the championship decided on the field. And regardless of whether you like this guy or not, I don't think you can have a true champion if they're undefeated and they're not in the conversation.
You have a lot more faith in the fans than I do. I don't see fans rallying for Florida State as a team that will get screwed. I mean, I just don't. I think Jameis has done so much damage that I've never seen so many people root for Notre Dame in my life. And Notre Dame is not a school that is easily liked, but people were rooting hard for Notre Dame to beat Florida State on Saturday. I just don't see teams or fans sort of getting behind the Seminoles.
Well, do you guys have a problem with Jimbo after that Notre Dame game telling Winston, hey, be humble, because if I'm 20 and I'm as good as Jameis and, you know, I have a golden arm, I think I may just do the Randy Moss pantomime mooning the crowd the entire post-game press conference.
Nah, it was good coaching on Jimbo's fault. I mean, he at least made the effort to say, hey, look, you know, you got to control it here, or at least try to. And, you know, Jameis was fine after the game. He didn't, you know, do anything that made headlines. And yeah, I'm just glad Jimbo's aware that his quarterback is a bit of a polarizing figure at the moment. So anything he can do to control that is probably good for not only Jameis, but for Jimbo as well.
Yeah, he's polarizing. And he's also got that elephant in the room, which is the race thing. It's like, if you thought people hated Johnny Manziel, imagine if Johnny Manziel was black. How much people would have hated that kid. Like, it's one thing to be the cocky college quarterback, but when you're the cocky black college quarterback that people think got away with a crime, like, That's a no-win situation,
well,
man.
He died away for crime. We can have that discussion later, but I fully believe that something went down. And
I'm sure something went down, but I'm not going to say that I know for sure that he raped that girl. Like, I don't know.
We don't know for sure, but yeah, so.
Like, those, when you get college kids and alcohol mixed up, it gets real messy, real dicey. Like, that whole scene, what we know of that whole scene just seemed real suspect. Like, who are these friends? Who are these people that are watching her back or watching his back? Like, college kids, it's just messy.
And, you know, the racial point, I don't want to say Pittsburgh as a whole, as a Steeler fan base is racist, but, I mean, I throw out there that the Steelers should look into drafting Winston. He'd be a perfect replacement for Ben because Ben's going to be 34 when his contract's up in 2016. Winston and Ben are the same size. They look like they play the same style of game. But the blowback I get is, oh, we don't want that scumbag on our team. We don't want that rapist, the blah, 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 blah.
I'm sorry, you got Ben Roethlisberger.
That's what I said. Well, Ben was accused, never convicted. Like, that's kind of the same thing. So where am I missing this? Like, what point am I missing that a Roethlisberger-Winston comparison is so completely far-fetched?
Well, I think it comes down to a bit of race and a bit of just time. I think time heals a lot of stuff, and the Ben stuff has been a few years now, and he's been, to his credit, not been in trouble since then. So I think that does help, and I think eventually, 5 years from now, people, if Jameis can find a way to stay out of trouble, that people will sort of, I mean, look at Kobe Bryant, for example. I mean, this dude been on trial, was flying from his trial two playoff games, played and went back to the trial, and no one really said anything, and he managed to restore his image. So I just think time will help him in the long run.
And then his shoe sales spike too.
Yes, Steve Bayless.
The only thing that hurts Jameis in this comparison, opposed to Ben or as opposed to Kobe, you know, when they were professionals and they had opportunities to win championships, even if he wins the national championship this year, people are not going to get off this kid's back. I think that the best thing for him is just, this season can't end quick enough for Jameis. Get to the professionals, you know, be on a bench for a year, then come out and do your thing. Because I think that it goes back to the discussion we had with Cam Powell last week, TJ, in the way that we view these kids as we hold them up to such a high esteem, right, whereas we don't hold the institutions up to that same esteem. You know what I mean? Like the free labor, the free publicity that these kids are providing for these schools, and you know, we expect them to be professionals, but we don't want to pay them like professionals.
Right. It's like I said it's like Todd and I discussed on our podcast 2 weeks ago. The NCAA is acting like a mafia in that if they're not getting a cut of what you're making, then they're going to find a way to snuff you out, like Todd Gurley. They're not, or even Jameis, or Pitt, back to Johnny Manziel, or Terrell Pryor and the Ohio State team, the tattoos they got for signatures. If they're not getting a cut of the money that you're making, then they're going to go, you know what? You're down. You're going to not play, and that's going to teach you for going against us.
Well, I'm just curious what's going to happen when he does go pro, and eventually he'll get drafted. I mean, I can't think of an NFL team fan base that will embrace this guy at the moment, the way he's going. Someone's had to draft him, right?
Until he starts throwing touchdowns.
Yeah,
then and they're then, like, great, we love you, Michael Vick, dogs, and oh, but you're going to take the Eagles to the playoffs. You're amazing again and win me some fantasy football points.
Yeah. But as a Jets fan, I don't want him, to be honest.
No, that's just because you've been burned too many times by bad quarterbacks recently.
Give me. Actually, I can't think of a white quarterback in this draft. What? Who's coming on top of my head? The three guys coming in my head are Mariota, Hundley, and Winston.
And Bo Wallace. There hasn't been a quarterback come out since Cam. And since then, even looking back now in the NFL, out of 32 teams, there are three SEC quarterbacks that are starters. And you have Peyton Manning, who's damn near 40 and hasn't, you know, came out in 1997. Cutler from Vanderbilt, and now Cam from Auburn, which if UCLA would have paid his dad, allegedly paid his dad money, he probably went with UCLA and not Auburn.
Let's take a look here at the list of prospects for quarterback real quick. Mariota, Jameis, Connor Cook, who I don't want on my
Bo
team.
Wallace.
Bo is further down on the list here. He's ranked as, well, this is a CBS list, he's ranked as the 10th quarterback.
Right. So he wins
Prescott,
the national title.
Yeah.
Shoot him up a little bit.
Oh, Bryce Petty. I forgot about Bryce Petty.
That's right. Old Bryce Petty, who is one hit away from, I think, turning into dust.
And Sean Mannion, Oregon State, who's a guy who can throw some passes. He'll get you some yards, but I'm not sure. Bo Wallace is projected as a fifth round pick, by the way.
Yeah.
So
he's like A.J. McCarron out of Alabama. He's going to do a lot of great stuff and win a lot of games, but not make a real impact on an NFL squad.
Yeah, so overall quarterback is pretty thin outside of the top, I guess, two or three guys. I'm not sold on Connor Cook.
No.
If he comes out.
Yes, your Jets would be lucky to get Jameis, man.
Oh, boy. I'll take Bryce Petty at this point.
Or
Jameis?
or a washed-up quarterback that ends up showing his junk to local. No.
That, too. Yeah, we've done that route.
You guys have.
Yeah.
With that SEC West, they're going to eventually knock each other out. You know, Alabama, they still have Auburn. They still have Mississippi State. Mississippi State, they still have a tough slate on their own with you know, the Ole Miss game, plus Alabama, plus a tough one at Kentucky, which doesn't seem like you know, a powerhouse as it is, but they've played really good under Bob Stoops' little brother. Plus, they have Arkansas with Bielma, who has played the entire SEC top this year despite not winning. LSU, playing in the weeds, they can take down Ole Miss this weekend with hosting the Rebels, you know, in Baton Rouge. So this SEC West that is looked upon as, you know, the top four out of five, they could end the season with maybe one team in that top five, and then what do you do with the playoff?
Yeah, I think that's why Michigan State is going to be in good shape, because they have found a way to get high enough in the ranking where they can still sneak in. And if they can beat Ohio State at home on November 8th, I mean, that's going to be – that's their only last ranked game on the schedule. So I think they might be in a similar situation as Florida State in terms of strength of schedule, because the Big Ten's been so god-awful this year.
Yeah, until they play the Big Ten title game against probably Nebraska, who will be a ranked team, which is going to hurt the Big 12 in that Baylor shot themselves in the foot this week, losing to West Virginia. They basically sealed their fate as a conference of not getting a playoff team in because they lack that conference championship. So, you know, did they really shoot themselves? Did the Big 12 just lose a chance at a representative with that loss?
Yeah, I'm not even sure who's in the driver's. I'm not buying Kansas State as the team. And I'm not really buying TCU either. I don't know who's going to come out. Maybe Baylor? I don't know.
Yeah, Nate, coming from there, and even if the SEC has two one-loss teams, do they get in? Do they get two teams in over Notre Dame with just one loss?
Anybody other than Notre Dame might say yes.
Well, what if it's Alabama? A two-loss Alabama team or a one-loss Notre Dame team?
A one-loss Notre Dame team. That is the million-dollar question, because you've got two schools that are media darlings. Alabama's got the championship pedigree. I think in that case, you probably would have to go with Alabama.
Well,
just based on strict schedule.
Well, Neil, I'll ask you this. It's an undefeated Mississippi State that loses in the title game against a one-loss Georgia. I mean, how can you say you go ahead Notre Dame, whereas Mississippi State, your fan base is as big as, you know, the Golden Domers. You guys sit on the sideline and go have fun in the Orange Bowl whilst we take Notre Dame over you guys with one loss.
If that's the case, if State runs the table and beats Alabama on the road and Ole Miss on the road and loses in the title game, I think they're good. They'll get in.
I would agree with that.
Because that's still pretty damn impressive to win both of those games on the road. And if they slip up, I think they just slip up, and that's, you know, I think they'll get in.
And then the playoff committee trolls Florida State by taking Notre Dame over an undefeated Florida State.
It's actually going back to Mississippi State. That I don't remember the last time a school has defeated number 2, number 3, and number 4 in one season. And also number 6. Texas A&M was 6 at the time when they won as well. So that's pretty solid.
It's almost like Auburn's run last year where they had miracle games and just completely wiping out Georgia, Alabama, and I think LSU as well.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I'm thinking that I'm hoping that the committee will do the right thing. Shout out to Todd Willingham because, as Cam told us last week, man, if Ty's got that deciding vote, Notre Dame ain't getting in. Let's just keep it real.
And I asked this to Todd today, and you know, Marcus and Nate can jump in for this one. We go after Jameis and you know Todd Gurley with our pitchforks, trying to find out if they signed stuff. But yet Mississippi State, Mississippi, they get flown under the radar of all of a sudden going from 8-win teams of Mississippi State or 5-win teams like Ole Miss, and they're 1-3 in the nation. So what's going to happen in 3 years whenever we realize, oh, this team's been cheating, or you know, will there be an investigation in 3 to 5 years that shows, okay, this is how they got so good so quickly?
3 to 5. Yeah, I'm thinking 1 to 2.
Yeah. I've been saying this for a while. I'm not the only one. It's like, you know, you're looking at these teams that come out of nowhere, like a Randy Orton RKO, and we'll get to that in a second. but everybody's just, you know, playing cool. Like, oh, it's just great recruiting classes, and the coaches have done an excellent job. And, yeah, sometimes that can be the case. But I think it's really funny with the NCAA and with the fans to a certain extent where we don't like cheating unless it's the good kind of cheating. Unless it's the kind of cheating that puts a winner on the field. Unless it's the kind of cheating where, you know, we don't have to see. What's the old saying? Just bring me the steak. I want to see how the cow is butchered. And that's what it is with these teams. Like, and again, Mississippi and Ole Miss, who knows? They could have just had these remarkably phenomenal once-in-a-generation recruiting classes, and the stars are aligned, and this is what's coming to fruition. But in all likelihood, somebody is going to get some scholarships revoked within the next 2 or 3 seasons. Which leads us to our next topic. Of course, TJ, a big wrestling fan like Marcus and myself, and I don't know if you guys knew, but there's a pay-per-view coming up this weekend that you can purchase on the network for only $9.99.
Oh, I know. I will be there.
Did Stephanie McMahon demand that you be there?
Yeah, as we shared in segment one about my Stephanie McMahon story about the pay-per-view. No, she demanded I not be there. So, I'm not excited about this pay-per-view.
I would disagree. I think there are a lot of quality matches coming up here with the rebirth of the old rivalry of Cena Orton that deserves a Hell in a Cell blow-off feud. It's been dormant for the better part of, what, 2008 or 9, when they had 600 title matches in a row. But you had the emerging Rollins and Ambrose. You have a very quality Divas title match in AJ and Paige. Plus,
again,
they can still bring it. At least they're not putting Summer Rae in that match or the redhead whose name I'm forgetting there you go. Sorry, I only know of her through Total Divas recaps over at Upper Ox. But it's going to be a good. I mean, in the Haas match with Rusev in a Big Show. Come on, you gotta love two giant people just hitting each other very hard.
I'm not excited about this pay per view.
Come on, you get a front row seat to see Damian Mizdow do his thing. Come on, that's gotta look great in person.
Yeah, that's not enough to sell me on it, but. Yeah, I'm taking my cousin for the first time to his first show, so I'm sure whatever they throw out there, he'll be thrown for, assuming Cena wins, just if not, then.
How old is your cousin?
6.
There you go.
Okay, I thought you were going to say like 26. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with your cousin?
No.
He's a grown man. And I just want to see Cena win, though.
Speaking of Cena, did you see the Cesaro quote about Cena Orton?
No.
I just was an interview in the UK. I saw it on the Fight Network, and he said, quote, "It's a new era of guys, it's a new generation, and it's a lot of fun to watch that because there are fresh matchups. I mean, I'm sick of seeing John Cena against Randy Orton for the 500th time. It's great that we have some new young guys that can come out and provide absolutely great matchups for the fans that are fresh, exciting matches, and things to watch." Taking a shot directly at the face of the company.
Well, there goes his push. Oh, yeah. Wait. It already stopped.
Yeah. So.
Well, isn't Cesaro a Cena guy? Like, Cena loves being in the ring with him?
I think so.
And doesn't it help Cesaro that he's a Stone Cold guy? Because it seems like every week on the Austin podcast, you see his name pop up.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's... I'm sure Cena isn't thrilled about being put to Orton, so I'm sure he's not going to get his feelings hurt over this quote. It's really just to be the creative team that's going to be upset about this.
And with Cena and his feelings being hurt, is it kind of like he needed to have the number one contendership match be against Orton?
Well, I'm glad they added, at least that they have a reason to fight now. Before then, it was just like, okay, why are they fighting, to be honest? But at least there's a reason. And my only fear now is that this will be the reason why this match will go on last and not Ambrose and Rollins.
I think they're gonna put Ambrose and Rollins last. I think they're going to do it. But I also think that the reason they're going to do it is because John Cena is not going to win that match.
Hmm. Interesting.
Why is that? I think Orton's going to win the match because we've already seen Cena and Lesnar twice in the last couple months. I think Orton's a good guy for, you know, a fresh matchup with Brock coming off of that RKO to Heyman on Monday night. You got a interesting story that you can tell for a little bit. Have that match at, what's the next one, Survivor Series?
I don't think it's happening in Survivor Series. That's the thing. He's not advertised until December.
So the Rumble will be the next time we see him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still going to go with Orton, though, because I think that you have Brock go through Orton. You've also got Ambrose, who I think can take. I think you'll see Ambrose go over Rollins because Rollins can absorb the loss with the briefcase. So then maybe you break off Cena and Ambrose into a little deal for a while.
Hmm.
And then Rollins was sort of, I guess, Orton.
Rollins is just going to be, I think Rollins is going to cost Orton the match against Brock in some way, shape, or form.
Again, we just had that angle with Cena. I don't know, but I know that
like that's the next one because I think what you're going to end up with is, let's assume Reigns is healthy at WrestleMania. You're going to get Reigns and Brock. You're going to get, let's say, Orton and Rollins and Ambrose Cena maybe as your top three matches.
Well, isn't Cena rumored to go into a program with Rusev as the All-American versus the Bad Russian, and that eventually kills Rusev, and he falls back into, you know, like White did after WrestleMania?
Yeah.
That could work, too. Unless you believe your boy and Angle shows up at Mania.
No.
I hope he does. I miss Angle. Hey, I feel so bad for him whenever I see rumors that TNA is going to sign him. It's like, why? Why go back there?
Why would they want him back? Just for that, like, the contract is outrageous. Unless he's willing to take a huge pay cut, it makes no financial sense for TNA to re-sign him.
No. Well, and I'll ask about the Hell in a Cell. Marcus, you're not excited for the Bella blow-off? You know, you're not, your cousin's not going to yell Brie mode? No.
My fiance might yell Brie mode. She watches Total great. Davis. I would be more excited if it was the Bella Hella and Acela, but it's going to be just a regular match.
So
that stipulation of the whole personal assistant thing, that'll be great TV fodder.
So in that one, the evil twin Nikki goes over, even though whenever you think about it, really breezy evil twin.
Why is Bree evil?
Well, you think of the the storyline wise that Bree always stole Nikki's boyfriend, or Nikki had to take a test for Bree or cover for Bree. I'm like, that would piss me off as well. Or even on the Total Divas, where they're Bree's no longer fun to hang out with because she doesn't drink and always is worried about her, Daniel Bryan and what have you. And Brimo's just an excuse to get all hammered and shit faced. Like that's a pretty evil person.
Maybe that's the match we're heading towards at WrestleMania. Maybe we'll get a mixed tag with Bree and Daniel Bryan versus Nikki and Cena.
I wish that would happen. Oh,
it's a matter of time.
And with Survivor Series coming up after this, I know you guys said with Rollins and Orton maybe splitting off, but is that where Orton has the face push, especially if he goes up against Lesnar, where if it's Team Authority versus Team Cena, Ambrose, and Usos?
Well, it would be in St. Louis. I mean, that'd be the right place to do it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That would make sense.
I know I said some bad stuff about the Royals a couple weeks ago, but the Cardinals are all right by me.
They're rivals. I mean, it made sense. He's a St. Louis guy.
Instant babyface. The only thing that make him more of a babyface is if he hit an RKO to opposite Darren Wilson.
No, that would make him a heel. How dare you attack this officer?
He was just doing his job.
Yeah.
Good old best fan St. Louis.
Oh, jeez.
The RKO protester.
Yeah. He's babyface turn.
And then go up on the turnbuckle and pose, or do that standing cheerleader toe touch he did after his one face RKO. I think it was a Christian or something. It's a good YouTube of that one, where he does the standing toe jump afterwards.
Yeah, I think it'll be a short-lived face turn, but I think that they should capitalize on it because the character needs a refresh, and this is probably due to the social media aspect of it. This is probably the most interesting Randy Orton has been to the wrestling fandom in a long time.
Since what, Legend Killer?
Yeah, so I think you could get maybe 2 or 3 months out of babyface Randy Orton before things go back to the status quo.
So if that happens, where does he go post Rumble if he does happen to lose to Lesnar?
In my scenario, I'm thinking that Rollins has to cost him something. It might not be directly interfering in the match, but Rollins, maybe it's a pre-match jump or something. Beats him down or whatever. Orton goes into the match against Brock. Gimp. But I think that Rollins has to be factored into it, and then coming out for Royal Rumble, you can do Rollins and Orton, and then that way, Rollins doesn't have to worry about WrestleMania because he's still got the briefcase, and if you want to, he can screw Roman Reigns. If Roman goes over Brock at Mania, the last thing we see is Rollins coming out at the end of the night and screwing over Roman Reigns, and then that's your next programming cut off of Mania. But for Orton, I think you go to that Rollins program, and then after that, I don't know. But just for the time being, I think Rollins is the most natural program.
Don't you just love fantasy booking?
I heard Triple H reads the internet and reacts to some fantasy booking ideas, so there you go.
Is this better or worse than that time we spent like 20 minutes talking about Bray Wyatt with Big Nasty? Marcus.
Oh, that was the tipping point for the show. I was just like, fuck this. I can't do this every week. Bray Wyatt's booking. Like, come on, I got a life.
That's when we stopped talking wrestling every week.
Yeah, that was we said no more of this. I can't do it. I don't care enough about wrestling to do this every week.
All right, so let's see. TJ, I know you like hockey, and Marcus is, of course, the founder of the Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. So I'll let you two talk hockey before we head out tonight.
we'll keep it brief. It's been a weird week in hockey because the two biggest stories this week have been stories that are not taking place on the ice with the Slava Voynov arrest. And then also today with the shooting in Ottawa, with that game being canceled and sort of somber feelings in Ottawa as a result. But what's been your biggest takeaway now from the first 2 weeks or so from the hockey season?
Well, it's funny that Slava Voynov case, he's now saying he did not hit his wife. And it's weird that the NHL, well, not weird, it's good for them to jump out in front of this, unlike whenever Volmaranov out of Colorado was accused of domestic violence and he was back participating with the team later once he got out of jail. You know, this comes out saying that he actually was no wrong to do anything that he was accused of. Is this going to be the precedent, not just for the NHL, but for all sports to jump ahead? And as soon as something sniffs out there that you're automatically suspended and get the hell away from our team, we don't want this public stink. But on a lighter note, hockey Jesus Sidney Crosby looking like the greatness that he is, that's been tickling my fancy.
So that means he'll be hurt by what, February?
I'm bracing for the inevitable concussion for no apparent reason. No, I'm getting ready for it, yeah.
No, the Pens offense has looked phenomenal so far. So I'm sure they'll be a threat as always come April. I'm rooting for the Islanders, though. I have a soft spot in my heart for the New York Islanders because I went to Hofstra, which is directly across the street from the Nassau Coliseum, the worst arena in professional sports. And also home of the Islanders who are playing their last season at the old barn. So I'm rooting for them to make the playoffs this year and go deep into the I don't expect a Stanley Cup run because they're not that good, but if they can at least not get the 8 seed and not get crushed by a Montreal or Pittsburgh in the first round, that'd be great.
Well, I think of the Islanders as Ring of Honor. They are the little federation that they have a lot of up and coming stars, but they're huge on that team. But you put them on Los Angeles or Chicago, and they're just a role player with two other giant stars. John Tavares is the best player in the Eastern Conference, not named Sidney Crosby.
Or Stamkos.
Stamkos is really good, but he's limited like Ovechkin is in that he just scores goals, and then what's he do? You know, you're not going to see Stamkos jump on the score sheet with three assists in a night and a plus four. Just like Tavares, he's not only going to help out with scoring goals, but he's also going to lead the team as well as the captain. I know Ovechkin and Stamkos are both captains of their team, mm-hmm. but when you think of the vocal leaders that's going to step up and put the team on their back, you think of a Tavares or a Crosby. And that's why, you know, you put him on – he's the whole reason why this Islanders team took Pittsburgh to six games in 2012. Could he do it again as in the first round? God, I hope not, because that team is quick. And Tavares, once he gets space, he's very dangerous. So, yes, with Halak in net, they're a team.
Finally,
that
a goaltender who's halfway competent. What a concept.
Right, and not an aging Russian. So yeah. That's also a double bonus. So that team can contend for a 2 or 3 seed because Philadelphia is down. New Jersey is old. I mean, they still have Yager kicking the tires on him. Rangers, outside of St. Louis, they don't have a scoring threat.
Well, Rick Nash has been finally Rick Nash-like.
Very true. Very true.
But Lundqvist has not been. Lundqvist has been pretty awful so far.
Yeah. But once, just like Nash with his goal scoring disappearing in March and April, once the calendar flips to March and April, Lundqvist turns into, you know, the cheat mode goaltender that carried that team through the second round all the way up to the Cup Finals. And in that Metro division, Washington's the only comparable team that could pose a threat to your Islanders taking a 2 seed.
Should be fun. Nate, are you still awake?
Huh? What? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm good. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree.
Nate, P.K. Subban is a great guy, and just find him and Pierre Maguire, and you'll be hooked back into hockey.
I guess I'm one of those black males that don't watch hockey like Colin Cowherd has statistics on.
Right. Of course.
What are we doing here?
PK's fun.
And he farts in front of goalies.
Yeah, that too. That won me over. Did we talk about this story in the show, Nate?
I don't think we did.
He admitted that he when he gets in front of goalies, he lets one rip to get an edge. Using your head.
He's like the dad in Friday. coming out of the bathroom with the spray.
Yeah.
Don't nobody mind the goal for about 45, 55 minutes.
Right, exactly. Or you have Seth Jones, the all-American. He's out of Nashville. He's a huge player. He's going to be a future star.
Wayne Simmons, who I love from his teen days.
That's right.
I am a fan of Seth Jones. Got all the toughness from his dad and none of the ugliness.
Yeah.
That's a win-win. That's a win-win.
Am I remembering this right? He looks like Sandman from Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yes.
With Popeye Jones?
Yeah, he does.
Is it that or is it more Bald Bull?
Bald Bull. Combination. If they had a love child, it'd be Popeye Jones.
Gotcha. All right. Just making sure. And on the CBC, you have Kevin Weeks. So there you go.
Yeah, we're trying to get Kevin on the show at some point. I interviewed him during his final season, I believe, in the league when he was in New Jersey. He's a real good guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll bring you back in, Nate. Come on. Come on in.
I guess I can be swayed back in.
Right. So, it's like me getting hooked into basketball when I lived in Indianapolis. I like the team. And then Paul George goes out and, you know, pulls a psycho Sid in the scrimmage, and now I'm out of basketball this year.
Well, I got preoccupied because I'm trying to send this picture to everyone. This is like the greatest, and it's fascinating podcasting, I'm sure, for everybody out there listening. But the results, the ends will justify the means. When you see this picture of this man.
Let's see here. Except this photo.
This man. Like, I don't want to talk about anybody, but this man doesn't. Like, I'd like to see a real-world ex-NBA player starring Popeye Jones.
Yeah. Looks like an old-school Dracula from 1920.
Hey, it's getting close to Halloween.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not safe for work.
Man, that's...
That is...
That's a new Twitter avatar right there.
Millions of dollars, so I can go into any club and go, I want you and you come home with me.
Yeah. Multiple women actually had sex with this man.
Yeah.
That's what money can do for you.
White women, I should say. White women.
We're going to have to post this picture up on the Facebook group. But like, yeah, if you were walking down a dark alley and this dude was behind you, That's a bad night.
Shit, walked down a sunny alley. It's a bad night.
walked down one of those Austin food trucks, and you got Popeye standing in line behind you.
Yeah, it's not a good day.
I need more sugar on my donut.
Yeah, I think you started young. Hey, you guys, everybody.
Oh.
He looks like one of the extras from the Goonies.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Let's just keep it real.
Three starring Popeye Jones.
Jacob Badnight.
Yeah.
Oh, Popeye Jones. But yeah, he's rich and his son's rich. So yeah, he's living a good life. Better life than me.
He's doing something right there. But no, come on back into hockey. We have drunk Patrick Kane, who's always going to bars at University of Wisconsin and stumbling out. Brad Marchand was too drunk to do his Stanley Cup DVD back in 2010. So we got a lot of characters in hockey.
Yeah, maybe once football's over, maybe I'll get into hockey. I just got a lot on my plate right now. Football, baseball, the NBA starting up. You know, I don't have a lot of time in my life for hockey.
I understand. That made sense.
You know, I got a hot pay-per-view to get ready for on Sunday. I don't have time, fellas.
Well, and I ask you guys this: if you were in Cleveland, you grew up in Cleveland, because I have a friend of mine getting married in March of 2015, and I asked her. I said, Amanda, would you guys, you and your husband, do the fake chalk toss at your wedding reception when you guys, you know, get announced?
Mm-hmm.
She said no. I'm like, well, how do you not do a chalk toss if you're from Cleveland? I mean, if you guys got married from there, would you chalk toss at your reception?
I can tell you no, because my fiance, that wouldn't fly.
No.
Maybe if my groomsman, if I do it with my groomsman, I would do it.
I'd probably do it. I'd do something silly like that.
Right. I agree. You should do that. Or find a boa and play yourself in like Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Either or, whatever.
Yeah, now I'm just thinking of crazy, wacky, zany wedding ideas that I gotta shoot to Marcus before he gets married next year. But that's like, Marcus, get this. We're gonna do an NWO theme wedding.
Nope, that's out. I told you I could. The closest wrestling connection I got approved so far was having wrestling related music for when the groomsmen and bridesmaid come out. But I don't know what I would pick for either. So at the moment, I'm deciding not to do it unless I can think of something good.
Fandango's theme.
Yeah, because there's nothing that, at least on the Divas side, that you would hear it and the casual non-wrestling fan would get it. I mean, for the guys, you'd play whatever and people would play, oh yeah, that's Hogan's theme song. But for the ladies, I can't think of anything.
You mean whenever you and your wife are announced for the first time, you should come out to the Bellas music of "You Can Look But You Can't Touch"?
That could work for the for the bridesmaid because they're all married.
There you go.
Or no, not all married. My future sister-in-law is not married, so two of them are married. But so that's one down. So I don't know for the groomsmen.
You know, it'd be terrible if your fiance came out instead of to "Here Comes the Bride." Came out to a, who was that, Michelle McCool's song, "You're Not Enough for Me." "Just Another Man With Your Eyes for Me." Oh, wrestling fans. Which is going to lead to a good conversation next week, TJ, that I need you to listen to, because it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to be talking to Steve Glenwick from tagmeadate.com.
Yeah, as long as you don't Lex Luger or Rick ruin the program, I'm more than happy to listen at the scheduled time.
Well, that's the beauty of the podcast, man. You can listen at your own leisure.
That's very true. My wife and I got married in 2011. I tried to put our music when we first came out to my old backyard wrestling days. As my pseudo of gangsta tea, because whenever you're a white kid in the suburbs and you listen to a lot of Tupac and Biggie and whatnot, you picture yourself like what life was like out in California and New York. So my entrance music was always "Two of America's Most Wanted" by Pac and Snoop. That quickly got shot down by my wife, who said, "That's no chance in hell. We're having that as our entrance music."
You know who did that, right?
Who?
Udonis Haslam.
Did he?
Really?
I believe so.
Up out of there. Ain't nothing but a gangster's party.
That's what him and his wife came out to.
That is amazing.
Wow.
And if you know anything about Udonis Haslam, it makes a lot of sense.
I was going to say, that fits. That fits.
That fits.
I heard the story where his house was getting robbed until they realized whose house it was, and they put everything back and they walked out nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's certain people that you don't want to mess with, and I think Udonis would be on that list.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Poor Tyler.
I'm surprised LeBron didn't just break him off like a $1 billion contract just to come with him, so he wouldn't have to play against him this season. nothing worse than like an enforcer that's pissed off that you left him.
Yeah.
Who's got 5 fouls to give? it's not going to end well. It's not going to end well. But this conversation ended well. Look at that right there. That's a segue. That's a segue. TJ, appreciate you coming back on the show, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, I was happy to be back on. Anytime. You guys can get a female on, and you need another guest. After said female guest comes on, I'll be more than happy to take time to jump back on.
And with that, Brother TJ, we're going to get out of here. But before we do, why don't you let the people know where they can follow you, where they can hear your opinions, read your opinions, and send you some advice in terms of picking out new theme music. You're happily married man, So maybe you need some theme music for. No, that's a terrible segue. Let me reboot that. I was trying to tie
you're
everything
good.
In.
It's fine.
We're doing it live. We're keeping this in the podcast.
Yeah. So where they can call me at is on Twitter at TJ McAloon. That's you'll figure it out. Or my own personal website where I'm the podcast of my own personal show kind of got derailed once Apple decided to upgrade their GarageBand to where it doesn't connect to iWeb. So that kind of stopped. But I am doing a running blog now of my wife and I expecting our first child.
Oh, congratulations. So,
thank you. It got turned into a podcast into the TJ McAloon, the scared, inept, and petrified future father. So we have the first two entries are up there right now of whenever we found out we were pregnant, and it was I have a weird way of remembering things around sports in that we found out we're pregnant during this year's All-Star game. And I can remember McCutcheon going against Chris Sale when the test being finally done and realizing that, you know, we are expecting our first shot. But yeah, so that's going on over there. The TJ and Todd's tailgate over at Place to Be Nation comes out every Friday, covering college football. Like I said earlier in the show, we just recorded today's episode talking about Gurley and Winston and the hypothetical of Texas paying each student athlete $10,000 a year to play for the university.
Very cool, very cool. So again, congratulations on the baby.
Yeah.
Again, check him out. I guess you could say he's a stablemate at Place to Be Nation.
I try to be on as many shows as possible. As before your guys' show, I did the extra point about 2 weeks ago talking about hockey and Eli Manning and sending their co-host into a complete 10-minute tangent on why the Giants need to get rid of Eli, which I was scolded. Please don't do that. He will not stop talking about how bad Eli Manning is. So I was very happy with it.
Good stuff, good stuff. So again, you can follow TJ on Twitter, check him out, you know, read the blogs, and you know, support the podcast, and then you know, he's a good guy. He's all right, you know, he's all right. Even though we had a bit of an embargo for a while, he's good with us.
I am like El Dandy, who will keep on coming back whenever you guys see me and sign up. And we'll work with La Parca. You might not know I'm always there, but you do like when I show up on the screen in a full skeleton costume and a chair.
In a chair.
Yes.
A chair, yes. All right. Well, that is the chairman of sports out there in Austin, TJ McAloon. Again, I keep losing my bookcase. Maybe that's that. Early Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah.
Either that or Popeye Jones. I got Popeye Jones staring back at me on my computer screen, and it's very distracting. So I'm going to get rid of this picture. We're going to say goodbye to TJ for now, and we'll be back with, I believe, segment four, Marcus?
Yep, think that's segment four.
Yeah. Segment four coming up next on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Nate and Marcus hold things down, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we got to leave you with what you want and what you need. And what you need is ratchetness. And each and every week, we go into the world of sports and pop culture, and we find some of the greatest stories to talk to you about. And we take that ratchetness and we throw it in a pot, mix it up, and give you some ratchet gumbo. And this week, we've got a real interesting story to talk about. No, it's not Nelly jumping on the Royals bandwagon after the Cardinals choked. No, it's not Matthew McConaughey saying that he approves of the Redskins logo. All right, all right, all right. We're going to talk about one of Marcus's favorite players.
He's not my favorite. He's not in my top 10.
Not in your top 10?
Nah.
Oh, it was the other guy that used to work here. He was one of his favorite players.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy. But, of course, we're talking about the Black Mamba, Kobe Bean Bryant. And as we are on the eve of, not the eve, because that would mean it'd be tomorrow. What's the right journalistic word, Marcus?
With the basketball season on the horizon.
There you go. There you go. Good job, editor. With the basketball season on the horizon, a lot of talk about the Lakers this season and some of the moves they made in the offseason and some of the moves that they weren't able to make because of Kobe Bryant. And there's a big article written about that, and it has generated a lot of, let's just say, buzz. I won't go as far as to say controversy, but let's say buzz and opinions, Marcus.
Yeah, so Henry Abbott wrote the story for ESPN the magazine, and it's titled Kobe. And the story basically paints this picture of Kobe Bryant as not only as a guy who is hurting the Lakers financially by this monster two-year deal he signed, or the extension he signed last season, but a guy who his teammates can't stand, and he's sort of, I don't want to call him a cancer in the locker room, but, you know, there are guys who are questioning his efficiency as a player, and whether guys like Ramon Sessions, who they mentioned in the story, guys on that level are deciding to sign elsewhere instead of playing with the Lakers because of Kobe. And the reason why the story is getting so much buzz is it feels like a bit of a hit piece, in my opinion, on Kobe because of the number of anonymous sources that are listed in the story where you have a story like this, you got to put some names to some of these quotes that you're putting out there. And if not, then you really have to question what's the point of doing the story in the first place. Is there an agenda by ESPN or Henry Abbott? And I don't know Henry Abbott personally, never met the guy, so I don't know what the agenda is or why he decided to do the story. But I will say it's interesting because this wasn't the first incident with ESPN this week in Kobe Bryant. Last week they were doing their rankings for their top players of the season, and Kobe Bryant came in at 40th, and you know, as Kobe, as you expect, that got under his skin, and he called out ESPN, and I think he called them clowns or something, with an expletive of some there in there somewhere. So he was upset about the 40th being ranked as the 40th best player in the NBA this season, and then a couple of days later, the story comes out as well. He said on Monday night or Tuesday night after the Lakers played Phoenix that, quote, "It's not the first one, and it won't be the last one." In reference to a story, you know, looking at his career and sort of his figure in the locker room. One thing I've come to understand over the years is that you have a bad story that comes out on a Monday, and it seems like it's the end of the world, and it seems like everybody's taking shots at you. But time moves by, and then you look back at it, and it was just a Monday. Then you have another great story that comes out maybe a month later or something like that, and it's a fantastic story. And then there's a bad story that comes out 1 month after that. So you understand that it's a cycle, and things are never as good or as bad as they seem in the moment in time. So, a pretty diplomatic answer by Kobe, because he could have really taken this a wrong direction and sort of just lashed out at ESPN. But have you had a chance to read the story yet?
I've had a chance to read the story. I've heard some of the quotes, and I've heard you know, some of the discussion about the article, obviously. I find the anonymous sources, especially when most of the anonymous sources are agents, mm-hmm. I find that to be a little bit problematic. I do think that there is merit in the sense of Kobe is, much like Jordan, Kobe is going to be not everybody's cup of tea in terms of a teammate.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the easiest guy to mesh with talent-wise. And I think there's a reason that over the years, you know, you you haven't seen premier guys want to come play with Kobe. Maybe part of it is not wanting to sacrifice their own star to play second fiddle to Kobe. But I think a lot of it is also kind of maybe the reputation that Kobe has around the league. So I think that aspect might be fair, but I also think for the most part that, you know, you had a, I won't go as far as to say it was a hatchet piece, but it's a little reckless. I'll just say that.
Yeah, just a little. And if you would have made the argument, yeah, Kobe's killing the Lakers because of his contract. Trust me, when that deal was signed, I was the first person who was upset about that contract.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show.
It really hurts what they can do during the next two seasons, and we saw that this past season during free agency where they're limited with the money they could offer, and guys like Carmelo passed on the Lakers, and
you end up with Carlos Boozer, Jeremy Lin, and Swaggy P.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Go Lakers.
Yeah. So, I mean, that part, that's on Kobe. And, you know, am I in any place to tell a guy not to get his money? No, of course not. Look at Steve Nash. He's been robbing Lakers now for three seasons with his paycheck and his salary. So, as long as Kobe understands that once he signed that deal, he can't expect championship talent to be placed around him. He just can't do it. It just there's not the money to do that. So if he's okay with having the Carlos Boozers and Jeremy Lins of the world on his team, then, you know, we'll see what he can do. But I don't want Kobe to come out in December and blame Mitch Kupchak about, oh, I don't have the proper talent around me, because Kobe, it's your fault. So as long as he doesn't do that, then we're good. But to put out the story and basically call him a cancer and say the reason why they haven't won since 2010 is because of Kobe Bryant, I just not really feeling it.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, it like both things don't have like it doesn't have to be one or the other. You know, both things can be true. You know what I mean? Like Kobe could be a detriment to this team in terms of getting talent, but it's not all on him. You know, there's an organizational thing that I think, you know, needs to be taken into account, like the Mike D'Antoni hiring. I think that had an adverse effect on bringing free agents in.
I mean, they're on their third head coach since Phil left.
And that's not Kobe's fault, that's management.
Yeah, the team hasn't been the same, to be honest, since Dr. Buss passed away. And when the Buss family took over from Dr. Buss, it's just been a shit show. And that's not Kobe's fault. You know, Kobe has sort of been stuck, like the rest of Laker fans, sort of been stuck with a dealt a hand that hasn't been favorable in terms of ownership. So there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah, but the final component of this whole story, Marcus, that really pushes it into segment four territory is the response from people outside of the sports media world, and one person in particular, and that's Flea. I know some of you are like, Flea who? Flea who the hell is Flea? But I'm sure any music fans out there remember the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Pretty hot in the 90s, early 2000s, kind of fell off. It still makes some pretty good songs, but Flea, the bass player with the sock over his dong and everything, has come out and gone. Who's the author of this article again?
Henry Abbott.
Henry Abbott. Yeah, Flea kind of took some shots at Abbott, and what made it even more funny and pushed it even further into segment four territory is who came out and patted Flea on the back. But defended Kobe.
Phil Jackson with the cosign. That was the best part. Was the Phil chime in? Go get him, Flea.
Yeah. And to me, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into this, Marcus. Maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist. But we just talked about the problems with Lakers management, and a lot of people will point their finger at Jim Buss, and somebody who. Some Laker fans would like to see running things is Jeannie Buss. And Jeannie Buss has a connection to the Zen master Phil Jackson. So maybe this was some subliminal shots, Marcus.
You mean a shot at Jeannie?
A shot at Jim.
Oh. No, because
you know they're not on the best of terms.
That's real Sabono, because he was the Flea's argument was directly at Henry Abbott, so no mention of the Buss family in the Flea. You're reading too much into it.
I'm just hoping like this is the start of the Phil Jackson, Jim Buss, Shakespearean feud.
Nah, Phil's a Kobe guy, and you know part of the story touches on when Phil left, so I think Phil felt like he was part of the story somehow. So,
well, I mean, it could be argued, you know, you talk about Dr. Buss passing, but it could be argued that that 1-2 punch of, you know, no Dr. Buss and no Phil Jackson, all your continuity and history to the past decade is gone except for Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, that's true. And that happened in a span of a short span when Dr. Buss got sick and then Phil was up for the job and was passed on and then Dr. Buss eventually passed away. So it Lakers would have been a lot different if they got over their differences and they hired Phil Jackson and he was coaching the team as opposed to
running the Knicks. One of those, like let's say, you know, Dr. Buss didn't pass or Phil got the job. It's like one of those two, like a butterfly effect almost. If one thing changes, maybe we're not talking about this. Maybe this article isn't written and maybe Flea isn't typing out mad emails or mad tweets laying under a mound of supermodels.
Yeah.
If he's still getting supermodels. I don't know. I don't know if supermodels are still into the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I think so.
Were you ever a Chili Peppers fan back
in
the day?
Oh, yeah.
They made some pretty good songs. I came front on them.
Plus, they're a local band. They're LA kids.
Yeah. And, on the down low, man, like, Chili Peppers were pretty down with a lot of hip-hop groups and hip-hop artists.
Yep.
Like, if you remember the Ice Cube Wicked video, they're in that. They were cool with Ice-T and Body Count.
That's right. So yeah.
I got love for the Chili Peppers. And your man Anthony Kiedis is in one of my favorite movies, Point Break, with Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze.
Oh boy!
So shout out to Point Break. What do you tell you? You never saw Point Break?
No.
Like you are the most non-movie watchingest person. I know you didn't see Point Break.
No, I did not see Point Break. I saw Match Point. I've seen that movie with Woody Allen, Scarlett Johansson.
No, it's slightly different.
Okay, I did see
slightly
that.
Different. I think there's more. There's a just a shade more violence in Point Break.
All right. Well.
So that's segment four. We're gonna close up shop for this week, Marcus. But next week, we got a big interview on tap for the people. Something like I like when stuff just happens organically, like Hollywood Simpson. You know, something we talked about, then we sent our man on the trail, and it resulted in a fascinating conversation. And I guess 2 or 3 weeks ago now, we talked about Tag Me a Date.
Mm-hmm.
And we were followed by Steve Glenwick, the founder of Tag Me a Date. And we've been talking back and forth. And he's actually heard the show, and he wants to come on and talk. So I already give Steve props for that, because we clowned him pretty good on that episode. There were words like failure and debacle.
Well, we actually clowned the people who would sign up for his service, not so much him.
Yeah.
If you're going to clown someone, it's the person paying the money, Steve. It's not Steve collecting the money. Steve is pimping. He's smart. Steve is doing it right.
Yeah, Steve, happily married man. He's making his paper.
Yeah.
Not mad, Steve. So not only are we going to have Steve Glenwick, founder of Tag Me a Date, on the show next week, Marcus, but we figured it'd be good to have a female perspective in on this conversation. And since we are talking about a site associated with wrestling, we figured who better to bring on than our good friend Sierra Reed.
All right, welcome back.
Yeah, so yeah, it should be crazy. It should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. If you ever wanted to know about Tag Me a Date, next week will be the show for you, because I'm sure Steve will have some good information. And I'm also sure that we're going to clown him. Or not Steve per se, but the site and the people.
I might clown Steve.
You might clown Steve? Yeah. You've been warned, Steve. So, yeah, next week, that's what's coming up on the show. Chat with Tag Me a Date founder Steve Glenwick, as well as Sierra Reed. Also, we're going to have our usual segments, segment 4. We're going to have second down. And who knows? We might, just to piss John Pollock off, we might go to part 3 of Marcus Vandenberg's Secret Origins.
By the way, Pollock can come into Toronto. Watch out.
When is that? When are you heading up there?
November 12th.
Okay. So, yeah. Will that be, will we be doing a show when you're up there? Will you be back in the States by then?
I will be out of town the entire week, but maybe we can work out something. Maybe we can do a joint show with John and Way. We'll figure something out.
Maybe, because is this your first time in Toronto?
Second time.
Okay, so you've never been to the Fight Network, have you?
No.
Oh man, yeah. I'll have to holler at John to see if you guys can record at the Fight Network, because I was there once. It's a really cool, really interesting building.
Yeah, I forgot Corey Irvin works at the Fight Network.
Yeah,
as well.
Corey's
as well,
up there. So. Yep. Yeah, you may have to make a trip up there just to say hi to John and Corey and Way. Yeah, and then maybe we'll be able to record something with. We'll have all four of us on the show.
All right.
So yeah, we'll see. We'll see about working on that.
But on that note, I gotta run. Gotta make this money at work. Twitter and Instagram, Marco Will. Traveling to Austin and Dallas this weekend, so it's been some Texas photos and Hell in a Cell.
All right, and check me out on Twitter, in the number 8, MOZAIK, Facebook.com.
MySpace.com.
Yeah. Hit us up on
Friendster.
Yeah. Facebook.com/ the Kings of Sport, as well as Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. And I think that's going to do it for this week. So Marcus is going to go to work. I am not. I'm going to enjoy the rest of my evening. I had a day off, so I'm going to enjoy the rest of my evening. Maybe go on Tag Me a Date. Look for some friendship. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton. Damn, they got my nigga. And you've been listening to the Kings of Sport.
You're not down with the Kings.
Yeah, you've been down with the Kings. Yeah.
That too.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD. Or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-D-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.